VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I want to welcome everybody to the VanWee Financial Hour, where all of our listeners are on a strictly need-to-know basis. Therefore, we will tell you in the next hour everything you need to know. How's that?
It's a good plan.
Yeah, I like it. To the regulars, welcome back. As always, we need you guys, love you guys, and hope you're always going to hang around and tell all your friends so that there'll be some new people, and hopefully there are some every week that get on to us either because you told them or because they happened by or they're driving somewhere or whatever. And for all of you, for everybody actually, why don't you stick around for a while, see if you can spend the whole hour with us. I promise you, you're going to hear things today you will not hear anywhere else. You hear a lot of details, many of which are cherry-picked out of stories that actually have some importance, and they're always picked precisely for a reason, either to help someone's cause or to hurt someone else's cause or whatever it is. So we'll try to be all-encompassing with the truth today. And the truth is pretty darn good. Which brings me to this week's Market Wrap, where we are once again in here on a Saturday morning smiling.
Absolutely. I want to start out with the number of the week. The number is 1 trillion.
Is indeed.
Why is that the number of the week? That is now...
That's a number of listeners we have now.
Yeah. The market cap of the Apple company just exceeded $1 trillion. First time in history any company has ever been that large. And it's completely arbitrary and symbolic, but it's still kind of cool that, that one company got to be that size. We will have a trivia question around that, but that comes a little bit later. So there's several other companies that are close to that 1 trillion mark. Apple was the first to get there, but watch for Amazon, Google, and Microsoft to potentially cross that level at some point now that, you know, once one breaks that thing, then it'll probably happen more regularly now.
It's market investor mentality. Oh my gosh, it's sneaking up there. I better sell some.
Yeah, they're all in the 800 million range.
There's several over 800 billion now.
To put it in perspective, though, Facebook, after its recent fall, is only about half of the market cap of Apple now. And Disney, just a mere $168 billion company.
And to me, I look at Apple and I look at all the stuff. I spent a lot of time there yesterday afternoon. And I'm looking at the people in the stores and the products in the stores and thinking, you know, this company is really tangible. Tangible.
Yeah.
They make is unreplaceable by anything else in the same degree. I mean, you just look at their packaging. It's the attention to detail.
Absolutely. That's why it's not, for a lot of people, it isn't, oh gosh, should I go get the new Apple thing? It's already been pre-ordered and they have to. Yeah.
Absolutely.
They have done an excellent job on marketing and creating that buzz around their products.
And after 35 minutes yesterday with Matthew, my problem was solved, and he took a hardware check on the thing first and said, it's not showing any problems, so my goal is going to send you out of here with your machine in hand, working.
Good deal.
And he did it.
And that kind of customer service doesn't hurt either.
It does not.
So anyways, we're big fans of the company, but that is beside the point.
And so should you be if you've invested in the QQQ because it's keeping it alive.
No doubt. Had another good week. So at this point, a potential trade war seems to be the only thing holding the market back. I mean, the market's still going up with all of this threat looming out there. And every week it seems like both China and the U.S. are threatening new tariffs and putting in new tariffs against each other. And despite that, the Dow was flat this week. The S&P gained 0.8%, and the NASDAQ gained a full percentage point. So for the third quarter, all three indexes are up more than 4%. Not bad for the summertime.
Nope. Year to date, looking real good.
Yeah, definitely. Earnings continued to pour in this week as well. More than 1,500 companies now reporting. The earnings beat rate stands at 67.3, and the revenue beat rate is at 67.9. That's up a hair from last week. Both of these are pretty good numbers, but they're also lower than the last two quarters. So, you know, not disappointing, but also not blowing the doors off like they have been.
Which brings me to the Fed meeting this week, where they didn't feel obliged to do anything about
it. Also true, yeah. But the good news was that forward guidance this week went from being largely negative to largely positive. So there's more companies that are telling Wall Street that their numbers are going to get better in coming quarters than are going to get worse, which is very important for the forward-looking market. So far, technology and healthcare companies are showing the strongest earnings. No surprises there. Well, energy and consumer staples are showing the weakest. Also, no surprise there. But despite that, consumer staples and energy stocks are actually doing quite well. So,
especially staples.
Kind of a disconnect, but they've been beaten down
yeah, so badly.
Definitely. So not really adding up that they're doing the worst, but having some of the better performing stocks, especially the energy sector, by mm-hmm. far the worst performer on beating earnings targets, but having a pretty nice run. A lot of that due to the price of oil, though.
Yeah, and again, they've been beaten up so badly, beaten down so badly, depending on how you want to say it.
Now we get to the interesting stuff. After a pretty disappointing economic data week last week, the economic data this week was much more mixed. First, the employment report. It didn't meet its forecast. It came in at 157,000 versus 193,000 expected. So what they didn't mention almost anywhere was that the revisions to prior months added 59,000 jobs to May and June, which more than made up for the miss on the forecast. So on the surface, did not look like a great report, but once you start digging, it actually wasn't bad.
I got a lot to add to that.
Go ahead. Be my guest.
Well, the number that we get first, usually the Wednesday of the same week, is, all right, we got time to do it, don't we? I'm going to come back to this because, good morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. And you?
Excellent. What's up?
My son is a Marine.
Congratulations.
Yeah, he just finished boot camp June 1st. Now he's in Missouri doing his MOS. But he has about, I guess it's about $25,000 to $30,000 he inherited from his grandfather. Mm-hmm. We are members at Vistar, and we thought that he was putting it into some kind of investment thing before he left. Well, it turns out it's just in a savings account or checking account. Mm-hmm. Not making any money. So I don't know where the disconnect was, but where could he safely put that money to sort of like a long term investment?
Let's start with the easy question. When will he want to use it?
I don't think he's going to want to use it anytime soon.
5 years or more?
Yes.
Okay. Now your answer just changed completely from, well, he might serve 3 or 4 years and then get out and buy a house or something like that. So we can now talk about risk.
How old is he? I'm guessing early 20s?
28.
Okay.
All right. When you have 5 years or more and you're young in order to invest, then you should be taking all kinds of risk. One of the major problems with young investors is they're afraid to take risk when risk is really a function of time, and he's got all the time in the world. Now, we're going to have about 30 seconds before they cut us off. Would it be okay if I put you on hold and we'll catch you right on the other side of the break?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. All right, we'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit about the pleasures of being young and having some money. Because, man, if we knew what we knew then when I was 28... Oh, boy, would we have had some fun. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We've got the call and some other things coming up. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanley.
And I'm Adam Vanley.
And on the line, we have Lynn, who is asking us about her 28-year-old son who's in the Marines and inherited a little bit of money and what to do about it. Adam and I have been talking about it over the break, and I'm going to rattle this off. Okay. I don't expect you to get it all the first time through, but I'll give you the concept. The right thing to do when you're that young and you've got years and years and years to invest is to invest it in the broad stock market, because over time, it is a miraculous thing what happened. One of my favorite questions for people is always, do you remember what the Dow Jones Industrial Average was on the day Ronald Reagan was first inaugurated? A day most of us revere, and many of us remember. So the answer, of course, the day was January 20th of 1981, when the Dow stood at 954. Today, where are we? 25,000 or something?
25,462.
And look what we've been through. The crash of 87, 9/11, 0789, you name it. We've been through all this stuff, and we've gone from under 1,000 to over 25,000 in the Dow itself, and similar numbers for the S&P. What does that tell you? If you got time, invest in it, right? American ingenuity will win. So here's what we think. Now that he is earning money, he is suddenly qualified to have a Roth IRA and contribute to it. The annual limit is $5,500. So the first thing we would tell you is to take the money out of iStar. They can't do this for you. Move it to an account that you open up at a TD Ameritrade, a Schwab, an E-Trade, Vanguard, your preference, any of the big names that you know already.
We use TD and really like them. So.
Yes.
And they have, throw a plug in for
they have an actual physical facility here. What part of town do you live in?
Orange Park.
Okay. Well, it doesn't really matter in that all these things can be transpired over or can transpire over the internet. But I would open up a brokerage account for him and a Roth IRA for him. Transfer all the money over to the brokerage account and then have whatever company you go with contribute $5,500 of it to the Roth IRA, and that will represent his 2018 contribution to the Roth. In both accounts, then, the asset we buy, and the specific one is SPTM,
yeah,
which is the Total Domestic Stock Market Exchange-Traded Tracking Fund. What that means is you're buying every company from the smallest to the largest in America that's publicly traded. So you can buy that, and the transaction costs and the holding costs for them are minuscule. In fact, if you go to TD, they trade it free. So all you have is the tiniest little cost inside there, and then you just buy it and let it wait.
And reinvest the dividends.
Yep. And January 2nd, it'll be 2019, and they'll open up again. You take another $5,500, and you move it over to the Roth for his 2019 thing, keep it invested the same way, and do this until all the money's transferred over to the Roth. This gives you a whole bunch of things. Tax-free growth forever, the ability after 5 years, if he wants to buy a house or something, to remove funds with no tax and no penalty to put to a home purchase. And there's also other various things that could happen that would allow him to get it out with no penalty or anything like that. Meanwhile, if he doesn't ever have to touch it, and he gets to be an age, shall we say, more similar to mine, he will have so much money he won't believe it.
Okay, so when he goes to do his taxes, is there something printed of this whole thing that we're going to do that will bring when he goes to do his taxes? Or
nope.
Is everything completely electronic?
There is one form that he'll have to file with his taxes that said, yes, I made a $5,500 right. contribution to my Roth. You got to put that in there because they have to keep track of the basis for you, so they make sure they don't tax you on it sometime.
Mm-hmm. It's not even a separate form. It's on the
it's
tax
on there.
Form.
Yeah. Did so. You contribute?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I know that all of that went by pretty quickly because it's hard to be tedious on the radio. But if you would like to send us an email, I will tell you what I just said in writing to make it easy.
That's very nice.
Can you do that? Send it. I'll tell you what, Adam design the whole thing, adam@vanweefinancial.com, or you can just go to our website and click on info@vanweefinancial.com.
Yeah, either way, it'll get to me.
Yep.
Info at, what was it again, please?
Vanwee Financial.
And Family Financial?
Vanwee.
Yeah. It's our last name. Yeah. It's V-A-N-W-I-E. If you Google it, we'll pop up pretty
yep.
quickly.
Yeah, V as in victory, A-N, we're Dutch, W-I-E, financial.com.
Okay. And that's info at, that's the email.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Exactly. And if you go okay. through the website to do it, hang around on the website a little bit. It's really pretty and it's got a lot of good stuff on it.
Okay. All right, I did take notes, but I will definitely email and get that in
yeah,
writing,
just,
and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't want everybody sitting around saying, okay, you fill out this line and do this and do this. I do have a trivia question, if you want to take a shot at it while I've got you.
Okay.
You want to try it?
Mine show my ignorance, but I'll give it a shot.
Oh, no, this has nothing to do with ignorance. Apple Computer just reached a market cap of $1 trillion, the first time any company's ever done that. What year did the market cap of the entire U.S. stock market first reach a trillion?
I don't even know when the stock market started. I know there was a crash in the 20s.
It was after that.
Okay.
They've narrowed it down now. We've got less than 100 years.
1990.
That was not a bad guess. You narrowed the gap, but it was earlier than that.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And
give us
the email, or you can call the office too if you'd rather. But anyway, get to us, and we will itemize exactly what we just told you. And a few years from now, he'll thank you profusely.
Absolutely.
I'll probably call you next week about my other son.
Sounds good.
The one without any money?
Don't get some money too, but he's probably going to need it soon.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. It was a great call. We had a good time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Just the man I was looking forward to talking to. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, Steve and Adam. A little different topic today I want to talk about, which is, do you all think that housing has peaked? I know Clark Howard went kind of neutral on housing a few weeks ago, being more cautious. And so instead of talking about stocks, I thought I'd ask you about housing.
Good question.
It is. I'm humming over here, and I'll let Adam answer.
You know, I didn't get a chance to, but I wanted to ask that same question to Angela and Howard in the break, but we didn't have enough time to discuss it.
Well, the forces are against housing. Prices are rising,
right,
and interest rates are going up.
Yep, definitely. I think that the housing market is changing, for sure. It's been red hot, as everyone knows, for quite a while now throughout the recovery. But I think we're seeing different things in the data right now. There, for a long time, they couldn't keep up with demand, and I still think that's true at the lower end of the market. But the higher end of the market, I don't think that's the case. We're not seeing the same type of crazy price increases. And I hate using Zillow as a barometer because it's never 100% right. But if you look at what's happened, they were forecasting 10% growth in the coming year, and now it's, I think last time I looked, it was flat, which is probably closer to the truth than the 10%. So I definitely think the market's changing. I don't think we're going to see a collapse by any means, but I do think that you're going to see spots in the housing market slow down considerably.
Please, no more 2007 incidents.
No,
please,
I don't see this being similar to that at all.
I don't either. That's why we can't have it go up as fast as it's been going up for as long as it was going up.
Right.
Because it'll lead to that again. Every time it's tried, it's going to wind up the same way. We just know it. So,
and you,
I think we're probably plateaued.
I
still
think
a seller's market,
it
though.
Really
There's
depends.
No inventory.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Nocatee, it's still selling like crazy.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, it's a lot more spotty than it was
and look,
before.
People are going back to work. What do people do when they get jobs? They start buying houses. So has it actually peaked in terms of price? Hard to say. Has it peaked in terms of sales? Heavens no. And the builders are not keeping up with the inventory shortages either. So I don't think it's something I would buy into right now, but it certainly isn't anything I'm going to avoid like the plague.
Yeah, we had one client that sold the home builder index recently.
Just because we think it's up about as high as it'll go for a while.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on this, Chuck?
Well, I don't know if you saw the article back, I think, 3-4 months ago by Ken Fisher in USA Today, where he talked about how a house is a lousy investment.
Mm-hmm.
Did you all read that?
I did not read that specific one, but I completely agree with him in a lot of cases. But it's one of the best ways that people have to save money for themselves.
Yep.
So in that regard, I would always encourage home ownership. But I think too many people look at their house as an investment when really it's a place to live.
Yeah, I'd look at it. If I wrote that article, it would be different. I would just simply say that a house is not an investment. Your house is not an investment.
And you do say that fairly often.
I say it a lot. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a lifestyle enhancement, and it also satisfies one of the basic needs of life, food, clothing, and shelter. But as an investment, no, although with the advent of things like reverse mortgages, it has been able to be manipulated into becoming an investment where you can leverage things. It's hard to leverage anything if you're not in the housing market. So it's a good concept, debatable in any one of many ways. But, you know, that's our thought. Chuck, question.
We lost your address, Chuck. Can you give it to Alan during the break?
Sure.
I'll put you on hold. And by we, he means he, by the way.
I blame it on our employee.
But. Yeah, okay. Well, she's not here. Thank you. Why not? Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate it. I'll put you on hold. We'll catch everybody after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our trivia question today brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888, and you will probably get him. The question is, on Thursday, Apple just set an all-time world record market cap at $1 trillion. What year was our entire stock market in this country first valued at $1 trillion, and we know it's between 1920 and 1990. So if we get enough phone calls, somebody will have to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like playing tiddlywinks or darts or something. Anyway, I want to wrap up. I'm going to tell you all the stuff that they won't tell you about the jobs report. There's about 10 times more that you don't know than what you do know. First off, on Wednesday, ADP, the payroll people, who keep their own independent survey, and they do it from sampling their own customers. So it's all private sector because they don't work for governments. They came in at a plus 219,000, spot on, perfect, wonderful number. And then the government came out on Friday, and they always release first the establishment survey. That's what everybody goes off of. They call the companies and they say, have you added people and so on? That came in at only 157,000 when it was expected to be closer to 200,000. Well, the government also does what they call the household survey, and the household survey is exactly that. They randomly select households and see who's working. Well, the strangest thing happens in the job market. When there's work available, not everybody goes and knocks on the door of GM and says, please hire me on your payroll. A lot of people go out and say, hey, you need some help on a project or something like that. They're called the self-employed. But that number was a little bit different than the establishment survey. That number increased 489,000 for last month. You won't hear that. Now, the unemployment rate at 3.9 is historically low. It was there a couple months ago, blipped up, blipped down. But I'll explain all that in a few minutes when I get into the way it's done and how poorly it's reported. But a couple things you probably didn't know. Adam mentioned that the increases in jobs for the prior 2 months were 59,000. That brings the average for the last 3 months to 224,000. So all the liberals are out there, of course, ranting and raving that Obama's average was higher. No, it was not. Sorry. All right, part-time people. During the 8 years of Obama, following Obamacare, when the full-time numbers were lowered to the 30-hour week from the 40-hour week, or you had to pay full benefits to people, what happened? People lost their 40th hour and their 39th, and all the way down, the average became more like 28,000, or 28 hours, I mean. And what happened then was a lot of people had to take two jobs, and a lot of part-time jobs were actually created then. Well, now those part-time jobs are turning into full-time jobs. The part-time people, for economic reasons, meaning that's all I can find, were down 176,000. Now, they're not counted as new jobs. but they went full-time instead of part-time, and you know what that means for their benefits and their pay. Now, the non-seasonally adjusted number showed a labor force increase of 512,000, which means people are pouring back into this job market, and that's what we have needed. The number of actual unemployed people went down 284,000 for the month. Think about that one. That's different than people who got jobs or didn't get jobs. That's the unemployed people, which means a lot of people are going, as I said, going out and doing contract work, self-employment, whatever. 37,000 new manufacturing jobs. Well, guess what the highest paid jobs are out there? Manufacturing. We've created 400,000 of those since the election, and those wages rise a full percent faster than do the non-manufacturing jobs. So you look at the 2.7% year over year, that would make it 3.7% in the manufacturing field. Black unemployment, all-time low. Hispanic unemployment, all-time low. Female unemployment, 65-year low. Huh. Now, every month, the number that comes out on that first Friday is the first preliminary estimate. They're always revised. This month's revision will be on August 22nd. You want to bet which way it'll be revised, up or down? I'd take that bet. But I'm on the upside. So, what is the reason that people don't know all that? Let's see. Maybe it's political? Oh, I think so. Now, let me ask you one more question. And I have never heard anybody but me ask this question. If jobs were not so hard to fill because there are more job openings than there are job seekers, what would that number have been if more people had been available to take them? You think it would have been 157,000 or 200 or 250? I'm betting on the 200 up. And nobody will ask that question. But anyway, my point is not to beat the horse until it's overly dead. My point is to tell you, be very careful when you're listening to statistics from people who have a point of view, shall we say. I may have a point of view, but my point of view is to tell you the truth. All right. Unemployment, one final thing. What we call unemployment today is not the way I grew up. Today, it's called U3, and it does not count those discouraged people out there who just throw up their hands and say, I've had it, I can't find a job anywhere. U6 unemployment keeps those people in. The U6 rate is down to 7.9%. But why do they use that? Well, let's give you a number. The U6 unemployment rate was 15.2% in December of 2011. Now, if you started going on the news and saying that the unemployment rate was 15.2%, whatever was president at that time would get an awful lot of heat. So they don't report it. They report the U3 instead. Well, it was 13.9 by July in October, but then it bounced back again. It spent most of the time for the prior 8 years before the election in the 10 to 15 range. It is now down to 7.9 and falling, and it did again fall. But it'll tick up and down a little bit, but under 8 now is a good thing. If we get under 7, it will be an even better thing. That means people really did get jobs. So just now you know more than you used to. Speaking of money, and we always are.
Mm-hmm.
We think about it. Last week, I talked a bit about the tax cuts. I started this out last year talking about what was proposed and how Trump had said on the 9th of February 2017 that they were going to introduce some tax cuts that would be phenomenal in terms of tax. That was his term. Well, later in the year, even though all the naysayers said it can't possibly get done by the end of 2017, by the end of 2017, it was down, and it took effect with this year's tax year. And I went over some of the things that got done. You know, got done in time, the 21% corporate rate, 25% pass-through rate for small business, overseas repatriation, personal tax changes, the rates were down, the larger standard deduction, some itemized deductions eliminated, and the estate tax doubled up to where hardly anybody has to worry about it. All well and good. I would say from the discussion we've just been having about jobs and economic growth and such that it's pretty well shown that it works. So now the administration has said we're going after round two. A lot of you know who Grover Norquist is, head of Americans for Tax Reform. He says the goal is one tax cut plan passes for every year of the Trump administration. That's my kind of guy. There is not much I'd rather talk about in finance than tax cuts because they work. So let's see what they're talking about. The effective date for the new ones. This one took place, and I explained last week, we always call tax year the first tax year that starts after the December 31st. So this one starts whenever your fiscal year starts. Most of us are just January 1, so it's not an issue. So this one started January 1 of 18 for us. This would take place the same way, so most of us would see the effects of this on January 1, 2019. Now let's start with the corporate tax at 21%. I first wanted the 15, like in the original proposal, and then they started compromising, looking like it would be 20. It actually came in at 21. Well, now they want to knock it back to 20. And I think if you're not going to try for 15 right now, maybe we do that later, but every percent counts. I'm all for it. All right, I'm going to take a break before I talk about the individual ones because we are right up on the break and we're going to have to run. Don't go anywhere. We'll wrap this up and lines are open, 222-8255. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. I saw some funny-looking guy in my yard as I was leaving. I swear it was him.
I swear he's always there.
Oh, yeah. There's that. Okay, good. Trivia questions still out there. Apple Computer attained a market cap of $1 trillion on Thursday. What year did the entire stock market here first reach $1 trillion? It wasn't maybe quite as long ago as you might think. It's just an amazing number when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You start counting zeros on a number like that, and you're not done for a while. All right, back to rates, tax rates. This, I guess you'd call it Steve's wish list for this year's tax law. And if I don't get them all this year, maybe I'll get some of them next year. If they do that one each year. First off, a little reason for this. A lot of what happened is not exactly what the administration wanted. But they had to do it because of the archaic and arcane Byrd rule in the Senate. Brought to you by Senator Robert Byrd years ago. And all they'd have to do to change the Byrd rule is change it. It's just that simple. The Senate makes its own rules and they vote on them. But they won't do it. And it causes some of the most insidious provisions to come into a tax law. For instance, the corporate tax cuts were made permanent. But under the Byrd rule, they had to come in at a number under $1 trillion as estimated by the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. The CBO is potentially the second or third worst government organization ever conceived of, and it has never been right about anything.
How do you really feel?
I'm not a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they're the ones that are required to use static budgeting.
That is not their fault. They actually have to do that.
Yeah, they have to do it. And all it means is they can't take into account human behavior. Now, this was mandated by the exact same Congress that just brought to you in the new tax law the chained CPI for Social Security increases. You know what the chained CPI does? It takes into account human behavior.
No doubt.
It's good to be a congressman because hypocrisy does not exist. Right? But I digress. Flow-through tax rates, that I have not seen any changes. I don't know that we need any. I know there were a couple of technical glitches in there. I believe they'll be fixed so that you can actually read the law and know what it says. When our own CPAs are confused by what it says, you know it's not well written.
Yeah, there's several of those, one of them being the second mortgage issue.
Yes, that's another terrible one. In fact, that's not in here, but I want to add that to the group because you're exactly right. I read six or seven different versions of it, and they were all the same. And then I read one by the guy I most trust in this world, mm-hmm. and it was a lot different.
Yeah, exactly.
So now here we're trying to give some advice to people once in a while, and you can't even ask your CPA because they don't know any better than we do. Crazy. Individual tax rate cuts. We got a pretty good deal in that the 10% rate was actually retained. They were originally talking about raising it, which would have violated their first principle, but again, I digress. There were some new rates put in after that, so you have to go way, way up now to even pay the 25% that almost everybody used to pay. That's a huge middle-class tax cut, and I love it. The problem is individual tax rates expire after 8 years because of what? The Byrd Rule.
Mm-hmm.
The very first thing they need to do in this year's tax law is to make that permanent. And, by the way, they have stated that that is one of their goals. The repatriation of foreign profits is ongoing. So far, $400 billion have come back. It's working. Don't mess with it. Standard deduction, they did what they said, $12,000 and $24,000. Aside from indexing to inflation, I don't see any reason to change it particularly. Adam and I have reviewed a lot of clients' tax situations and a lot of potential clients' tax situations. There aren't many people left who are still itemizing, and that does bring in some other opportunities for qualified charitable distributions that we have talked about and will again. But fundamentally, I approve of it, don't you?
Generally
a good deal. Okay, itemized deductions. The one mistake that I believe they made that was egregious, while they made the medical deduction a little bit more user-friendly, they also terminated it after 2 more years.
Yeah, that one, next. That's not good.
No. I not only believe that it should be made permanent, but I believe it should be even easier to claim because 90-whatever percent of us in any given year are not going to have this problem.
No, it's a very
specific
issue.
It's a 1 or 2%
issue. Yeah.
Which means this is the worst year of your life medically.
No doubt.
Help them put the medical deduction back in permanently and make it easier to get it.
Mm-hmm.
At least help the people. What if they're in the 10, 12, 14, 16, 18% tax rate? You're only helping them a little, but it still helps.
And who is most likely to need that? The elderly.
Elderly.
So
absolutely.
Why are we punishing them? It makes no sense.
Yep. Now, one of the toughest ones for me, the so-called SALT deduction, state and local taxes. This is where they limited all that stuff to $10,000 a year. Now, I don't live in California, nor Illinois, nor New York, or New Jersey, so ho-hum, right?
Yeah, it doesn't affect us at all, but it affects a lot of people.
Yes, and a lot of these people are very successful people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how much notice they were given about this?
Right.
None. Zero. If they wanted to do this, the least they could have done is phase it in. You have 10,000, start at 50,000 first year, go down to 10 over 5 years, anything like that. But to just clobber people like that, you know, a lot of people, I'm sure, live in New York, New Jersey, California, whatever, because they want to. But a heck of a lot of them do because that's where their jobs are, that's where their families are, that's where they earn a living. They don't really have the option to just pack it up right now and move to Florida. I think those people need to have some opportunity to adjust to this thing, have the states adjust to it, hopefully vote in some better people. It's the people that are raising their taxes all the time are now getting caught with their pinkies in the cookie jar. I thought that was terribly handled at the time, even though it doesn't affect me. It doesn't mean I don't care enough to talk about it, because I do.
So they also got a tax cut.
Yes.
By the brackets, but lowering the tax rates and expanding the brackets. So
yeah. It was partially offset.
The net result, I can't speak specifically because there's so many possible scenarios, but the net result is not going to be as bad as what the tax increase on that portion of their income will be.
By a year from today, we'll know a lot more because they'll have had some statistics come in for the first year 2018 tax filings that are done next year. All right, the estate tax, I did like the change. It wasn't exactly what I wanted. It wasn't exactly what a lot of people wanted. What we want is full repeal, and I would love to see it repealed. Everybody who has studied this stuff for the last 3 or 4 decades knows it costs the government more to collect the estate tax than they ever get from it, which it makes it ridiculous. It is nothing more or less than wealth envy among a lot of people who vote for a lot of other people who then pass these laws. I think it needs to be gotten rid of, but if it is, I promise you it'll come right back unless we codify it into the Constitution with a constitutional amendment. I would like to see that introduced.
It's such a dumb tax. It's already that it money's already been taxed. It's yeah. already been taxed.
And by the way, for those of you who say, well, the growth on it at the end was not taxed, when the estate tax goes away, it doesn't mean that all taxes on the estate go away. What it means is it goes back to capital gains tax, which is my one of my last comments. There is a proposal to index capital gains to inflation. Now, you could do all that at once, and you'd have a real winner.
Yeah, that'll never happen, but
yeah, well,
that's a good idea.
Well, you want a real winner, do the fair tax, and most people come at it that way, too, and it's just not going to happen. If I had my druthers, it would be very simple. Just do the fair tax and go away and watch everything explode. It was great. Anyway, in the absence of that, I think making the things permanent and reducing the corporate taxes and getting rid of as much as we can on the estate taxes and so on, the whole thing is coming around this time as a pretty darn solid proposal. Better than I probably would have expected them to be able to get, given the fact that we just went through all this.
Mm-hmm.
So if I sound like I'm unhappy, I'm not really that unhappy. The year was 1970, and Jimmy Carter hadn't been seen yet, which is probably why the stock market was booming and finally reached a valuation of $1 trillion. And by the way, you know, we tend to throw some words around once in a while. The term market cap or market capitalization is very simple. It means the number of shares outstanding times the price of each share.
Yep.
That's all.
Giving you the total value of the company.
Yep. That's what you have to pay for your share of it if you want to buy a few. All right. Well, this has been fun. Great callers today. Thank you very much. And we'll follow up on some of those. And we will be here at exactly the same time and exactly the same place next week with just all kinds of new fun things. Hopefully with another good week in the market. See you then. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.